argument, Gills versus Blanchard. Mr. Kellum.
May it please the court. My name is Nate Kellum, and I represent the plaintiff and appellant, James G. Gillis. Mr. Gillis comes before this court seeking relief, namely relief from an arbitrary application of a sales and or solicitation policy as enforced by Vincennes University.
Why should the university be forced to allow people who are uninvited to come onto the campus and make speeches or do anything else? What sense does that make?
Well, I think there's a couple of things to be kept in mind, Judge Posner. One is certainly if it's a traditional public forum, it ought to be a reasonable time, place, and manner.
Forget that. Come on. Forget those empty categories.
I'm sorry. If it's a designated public forum.
Oh, look.
Yes, Your Honor.
Forget about. Don't get into that trap of these categories. Just explain as a matter of common sense.
Certainly.
Why should a university be forced to allow anybody to come onto its property and give speeches? Why shouldn't it say, look, we only allow speakers, we only allow people on our property if they're either, you know, students or faculty, or they're invited by some student group, right? Why wouldn't that be entirely sensible?
Well, first of all, they don't do that here. What they do is they tie it to solicitation. I will answer your question. Because it's a marketplace of ideas, Your Honor. When you've got wide open spaces, everybody ought to be free to speak, whether they're favorable or unfavorable.
What if you have hundreds of people who want to go traipsing across the Vincennes campus giving speeches? Right? How could the university administer its educational program if its premises are flooded by these speakers? We have nothing to do with the university. They just come in. They say, "Oh, yeah, it's a nice lawn. I can give a speech here."
Well, certainly, just like a city park or anywhere else, Your Honor, you would have policies.
But the Supreme Court has
said
it isn't just like a city park. It's a university campus. Yes, it's a public university, but clearly, the fact that it's a university puts it in a different category than a public park in the city or the sidewalks or whatever that are in fact open in public places. University has a campus so that it can fulfill its academic function.
Well certainly, I mean, as Judge Evans noted in the dissent in Hostie v. Carter, its purpose is for the marketplace of ideas.
I wouldn't rely on a dissent by Judge Evans.
Well, I mean, to call
an exception,
yes, right,
Judge Evans, but generally, you know.
Certainly.
But the problem is, first of all, there's this common sense issue that the university does have a campus, and it's simply decided that a certain set of people are allowed to use the facilities of that campus, whether it's the inside of the buildings or whether it's the lawn. I don't know why, actually, in your case, there would be a difference between the two. But then secondly, the university hasn't even kept Mr. Gillis out. It has said, if you want to be in front of the student union, that's okay. I mean, why isn't that just time, place, and manner, even if this is the most expansive First Amendment right I can imagine?
It deprives him of an audience and also reflects
discrimination. No, it doesn't deprive him of an audience. It's right there in the public street. You know, person A may walk by the library and person B may walk by the union, but I don't see anything in this record to suggest that he's in some systematic, no one put him in a broom closet, nobody put him, you know, locked off away from public view. He's right in front of a major building.
The problem is twofold. One is there's just not many people in the area, and secondly, because it's
that?
A major street. Well, that because Mr. Gillis testifies to that,
and
there's no evidence to the contrary.
I don't know about that, and the fact that it's near a public street actually makes it a better location, not a worse one.
Not when you're trying to speak over the background noise of the cars. It certainly is not. I think the main problem that you've got here, Judge Wood, is you've got a library lawn area that's a free speech area on the campus.
You are assuming the answer to the question presented here. That library lawn area is part of the university's grounds, and the fact that something is part of the grounds, even though it's a public building, doesn't necessarily mean that people get to make speeches. the lobby in this building is part of the grounds of the Dirksen Federal Courthouse, and we don't have every random person from the city of Chicago coming in and making speeches there.
Certainly. I would say the distinction is that by policy and practice, it has allowed speech in that area.
Well, the record is not good for you on that. You've got the affidavit of the dean saying that that's exactly not the case. In fact, the people who've been there have been invited by student groups or have been university people.
That's not what the record actually shows, Your Honor.
I think it does. There may be one or two exceptions over many years. They are not even clear about that, and I don't know what Mr. Gillis's knowledge about that is.
Well, basically, we're relying on what they've told us, and what they've told us is that up until 2002, the area was free. There was absolutely no limitations, no restrictions on any speaker whatsoever in that particular area, and it was historically used. The Gideons used the place every single year. They used it on an annual basis.
They were invited.
They were not invited. They were permitted to speak, but they were not invited, Your Honor. There's absolutely no testimony whatsoever that they were invited prior to 2002.
Well, in 2002, they were invited.
Exactly. And what they say is they say that the sales and or solicitation policy altered the forum. And I would submit to the court that there's no basis whatsoever to suggest that this policy could alter the forum because it focuses
Why not? You mean because if I have my living room, I can't decide to have it open one day and not open the next day?
Most certainly you could. But I would have every reason to rely on what you how you've described it, and way they described it is sales and or solicitation. And what cannot be overlooked here, Your Honor, is that Mr. Gillis was not involved in solicitation.
The bottom line is he was allowed by the university to do whatever it was he was doing, whether it's properly described as solicitation or proselytizing or whatever it is he was doing, on a place on the campus, absolutely content neutral. All sorts of Christian activity was going on in this campus, all sorts of other activity. This is not a case, unlike some that we've seen, where there's even a hint of hostility to religious activity.
There's certainly a hint of hostility toward Mr. Gillis because he's treated differently.
But not because of his religious views or anything. He's an outsider and a disruptive one at that, it seems.
And I think something that ought to be...
Is the current policy that just invited people can use the lawn?
No, it's not. And I think that's really the heart of the problem. The current policy...
What is the current policy?
Certainly, Your Honor. It speaks to sales and or solicitation. So if Mr. Gillis was involved in sales or if he is involved in solicitation, then that may cause a different analysis than what we've got here. But I think the cogent point is they're using
my question.
Okay.
Can anybody who's not engaged in sale or solicitation make a speech on the lawn?
Yes, Your Honor. That's correct. Because there's absolutely no prohibition against that whatsoever, and that's the historical custom on the property, and also the physical makeup lends itself to those types of activities. And so essentially what I think it boils down to is two different inquiries. One is, did the sales and or solicitation policy, did it serve to alter the form so as to exclude uninvited outside speakers? If that's what their intention was, the policy simply doesn't speak to that. You could take a look at the policy. It does not say that. What it says is that they require prior approval for anybody on solicitation.
Is there any reason in this record to think that Mr. Gillis was unclear about what the university was trying to tell him?
I think there's every reason.
I mean, it looks like it's very clear to him that they were telling him, you can't use the library lawn, you can use this other place. We think what you're doing is solicitation, and we want you to confine it to this particular area. Now, obviously, there's a difference between a facial attack and an as-applied attack, but I'm looking at as-applied. It seems that he knew exactly what they were telling him to do.
Well, he certainly found out.
He disagreed with it, but he knew what they were telling him to do.
With their post hoc interpretation saying that we're going to arrest you if you don't go to this particular area, he certainly learned of it then, but when he looked
at... And he didn't go... I mean, he was told before... It's not like somebody sent up a patrol of officers to drag him off the campus. He was told beforehand, don't use the library lawn.
Yeah, he was given an option. You either move or we arrest you. Certainly.
So he knew.
Let me ask you just hypothetically, if the
Yes, Your Honor.
If the university were to extend an invitation to you to come and speak for a half an hour on a particular day during the daytime hours when students are present, and would say that that's it for the year, you can't come back after you have your half an hour, would you have a case then? Or do you think
I think it would be a different case because
every Friday or something.
Certainly. I think at that point it certainly wouldn't be discriminatory and he'd be allowed to have access to the free speech area like everyone else. I think it could have come a question whether or not it's an arbitrary requirement if you're saying half an hour, is there any basis for that? But certainly I think it'd be a totally different case. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kellum. Mr. Sewers?
May it please the Court. I'm Dan Sievers. I'm here representing the university defendants below, the appellees here. I want to start out, as the court pointed out, Mr. Kellums continues to talk about our campus.
Understand. Why didn't the university just say no uninvited speakers on the lawn? This definition of solicitation is, or the application of it to Gillis is very dubious as a matter of language. What's he soliciting for?
Well, I think certainly, and as I admitted in my brief, the policy isn't artfully drafted. I didn't write the policy. I wasn't involved in the drafting of it. But the
problem is I have the same issue. I mean, this word solicitation appears to mean whatever the dean wants it to mean. And in terms of the First Amendment, these wide, unfettered discretion sorts of policies suggest that there are all sorts of pitfalls in this one.
Well, as far as I think if you look at the definition of solicitation within the policy, you look at a generally accepted, or you look at Black's Law Dictionary or the Random House Dictionary, I think what Mr. Gillis is doing
is... I don't understand. If the Pope gives a speech, is that a solicitation?
I think if he's there preaching, asking...
Answer my question. You know the Pope gives speeches, right? Speeches, encyclicals, you know, all this stuff. Is that solicitation within the meaning of this university policy?
I think if he...
Well, don't give me an if. If you can't answer my question, what it shows is that your policy is completely nebulous.
I don't believe it is, Judge Bosner. It depends on where the Pope would be giving the speech.
No, it doesn't. It's the content.
St. Peter's got a balcony. He goes out there, gives a speech, right? Gives a speech, Christmas, what have you, right?
Sure.
He's addressing the world's Catholics. And he'd like some of these benighted other people to become Catholic.
But in that...
Now, how's that different from Gillis?
He's not approaching people, asking them to embrace...
The Pope isn't asking people to embrace God?
He's...
That really seems unlikely.
Not when he's... I think there is a difference, though, Judge Wood, between being in a public place where you're approaching people that aren't... Certainly the people in St. Peter's Square are there because they want to hear the Pope.
Well, maybe not all of them. Maybe somebody went along to be polite to a friend. I mean, the Pope is exhorting people. There's an idea in solicitation that you are trying to urge somebody to do something. And if Mr. Gillis is out there trying to urge people to be better Christians or, you know, to refrain from various kinds of immoral behaviors and the like, that I don't see what's the difference, actually. I mean, if solicitation means anything except standing up and reciting the Gettysburg Address, which is the only example in the record I saw of something that wasn't solicitation, it's completely meaningless. It means everything.
So you've confused solicitation with exhortation.
I think it talks about imploration, talks about
hopeless,
approaching people.
Absolutely helpless. Let me ask you this. Can anybody who is not a solicitor in your crazy definition come on to the lawn and give a speech? You say in your brief that this badly drafted rule is aimed at uninvited speakers.
Sure.
Well, what kind of uninvited speakers can go on to the lawn? Is there any form of uninvited speaker that passes, you know, that passes muster under your definition?
I don't believe there is. And the record doesn't
show. So what does
it
have to do with solicitation then? I mean, you're saying essentially, you know, if Maya Angelou decides to come onto the lawn and read some of her poetry, I'm guessing maybe that's not solicitation, but you still say she can't do it.
Well, I think the university is free to control their property. They have
that's
never.
That's not an answer to a question, though.
Is there another rule someplace that you haven't cited to us where the university says people come on our campus only with our permission?
The university has never. There's never been a history of outside. As you pointed out, there's very limited facts in the record.
Well, maybe we need more facts before we trample on people's First Amendment rights.
The only examples of uninvited outsiders that are in the record are Mr. Gillis himself and one other set of individuals that came in 1998.
So our what are you going to do with Maya Angelou? She decides she just wants to speak to the people at Vincennes University, and she wants to come read some poetry on the library lawn.
Then at
you
that...
kick her off?
Well... I'm not sure what the university officials would do with that. But I do think if you read the dictionary definition, what Mr. Gillis was trying to do fit within the policy.
No, what about these Gideon Bible people that Mr. Keller mentioned?
The Gideons had been to campus on prior years. Every time before they called the dean of students, said, we would like to come to campus. They asked permission to come, and they did that. There's no evidence of them being in this. Mr. Kellums is
in. Is it your argument that in regard to the drafting, so you're really arguing that this poorly drafted rule is a rule that nobody can use the lawn without permission. Is that what you're saying?
I think that is the rule, and it has been enforced. And I think certainly.
What are the criteria for permission? Does the president have to give permission?
Anybody who's asked permission to speak in the designated area has been given permission.
Except Mr. Gillis, who wants to speak on the lawn, and you've put him over at the union.
Right. Anyone who's asked permission to be in the designated area under the policy has permitted.
No. We're not talking about that. Has everybody who's ever spoken from the lawn, has that person always gotten permission?
There's nothing that I don't believe in as far as what Mr. Kellums is saying about the Giddings being on the lawn. There's nothing in the record about anyone asking permission or being on the lawn other than Mr. Gillis and the people in 1998. The Giddings, what's in the record isn't that the Giddings were in this particular spot. They were on campus, but it wasn't in this particular area necessarily.
The lawn.
Where were they?
I don't believe that's in the record, Judge.
So how do we know they didn't cross the lawn?
They may have. They may have.
Are there some criteria? Does the school have some criteria for student groups that want to invite people to speak?
I think they're able to invite whoever they would like to invite as a member of the campus community.
Well, could a student say, I want to invite a neo-Nazi to give a speech on the lawn? That's okay?
That certainly hasn't happened. If that student is a member of the campus community wanted to, or if that student was a neo-Nazi.
If you want someone who come to avoid the solicitation, he's going to come and read passages from Mein Kampf while wearing a Nazi uniform.
Then he wouldn't be soliciting. He wouldn't be approaching
people.
He wouldn't
be soliciting. So any student who wanted such a person on the campus, on the lawn, would be able to invite him?
I believe they would be.
Wouldn't need permission from the dean?
I believe they would be able to associate with that person. That's a view that student as a member of the campus community wants to bring to campus. And as a university, we want to devote, my clients want to devote their facilities to education. It's a marketplace of ideas, but certainly I think the members of the community have to be interested in those ideas. They need to be want to hear those ideas.
You're making a perfectly good argument, which I would find convincing, that a university can limit the use of its facilities to people who are either part of the university community or they're invited by the university,
and
provided they don't use, you know, invidious criteria.
And Judge Posner, that's...
See, But that isn't your rule.
But that's, in fact...
This foolish solicitation rule.
That's in fact, what they have done in practice.
Why don't they say no uninvited speakers instead of the solicitation business?
And that's certainly what they should have said.
Right.
That's what they should have said. But I think in Mr. Kellum's side to the airline pilot's case, favorable, saying it was favorable to him, I think if you look at that, this isn't a policy we've made up. It's, in fact, the policy we've enforced.
Your argument has to be that despite the words on the page of this sales solicitation policy, you are suggesting, if I understand you correctly, that if we look at the record, we will see that there is a de facto policy somehow that the evidence shows has been followed by Vincennes, and that at least has been the consistent one, and that Mr. Gillis, I mean, this is a question. I'm not sure that that's what the record will show, but if there were such a de facto policy and everybody knew what it was, then maybe you could stand on that policy.
If I may.
Please.
I think if you look at the record, that is what's there. No one has been permitted to be on campus. No uninvited outside speakers have been permitted to be present anywhere other than the designated area. And before the policy was passed, really things are no different now. There was no policy before in the university as long as they
when
don't.
When you say there was no policy, though, what I think you're saying is committed to paper.
Correct.
Because otherwise you're being contradictory.
Correct. I mean, there was no policy committed to paper.
That the practice, to use a somewhat different word, was consistent throughout time. Then they wrote this sales solicitation thing, put it down on paper, but in fact this practice continued to be.
I think, and you're pointing out the contradiction, I think the policy has been consistent, and you're taking us to task for our definition of solicitation, how we're applying it, but in fact how we have applied it since it's been passed has been consistent. The fact of the matter is before this was committed to paper, the university had never had this issue come up. They didn't know how they were going to do it. And in fact, when Mr. Gillis came in 2001, they didn't know what to do. He's there preaching. There's people all around him. There's a disturbance. And they didn't know what to do because they hadn't addressed it. So they may not have done a very good job in writing their policy, but since they did that, how they've put it, they've not engaged in viewpoint discrimination. I think you agree that what they've done, at least in practice, is reasonable. So I think if you look under airline pilots, under that case, you have to look at what the policy's been in practice, what and how the policy's been understood. And there isn't, I think there's other case law out there that suggests in a non-public forum, which this is, as to Mr. Gillis, there doesn't have to be a written policy.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sears.
Thank you.
Mr. Kellum, your time expired, but you can have a minute if you want.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think what it boils down to is...
Is it just the Gideons and the Duncans who have used this, who have... The law in
as
the
far as, yeah, yes, Your Honor, the history prior to 2002 were the Gideons, the Duncans in 1998, and Mr. Gillis in 2001.
Pretty thin.
It's thin, but I would suggest, too, that there's absolutely no sign of...
Where the Gideons and the Duncans were on the campus?
The Duncans were on the library lawn area. The testimony about
the Gideons.
The Gideons is that they were all over the campus, including the library lawn was the testimony. They used the campus, including the library lawn, is the testimony. And so the problem is if they wanted to exclude outside speakers, the policy doesn't do it. What it speaks to is sales and or solicitation, and so it's certainly violative of due process and free speech to shoehorn Mr. Gillis into solicitation if what they're trying to do is restrict uninvited speakers. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you to both counsel.